Walt's got to be feeling a little nervous because, you know, you're within 7 nominations of him now. With This Is 52. He's got 59.
Does he really?
Yeah, so you're in striking distance, for sure.
Well, I don't know about that. How fantastic that is.
And, of course, for number one, he had a whole studio working with him. Mm-hmm. Most of those nominations were for, like, 3 and 4 minute cartoons. Mm-hmm. And it's just you and your pencil and a sheet of music paper, still.
True enough, Jim. Yes, it's true. It is, I'm 52 years. I really can't get my mind around this. I mean, the subject of time has bothered all of us from Einstein and earlier and beyond. How 52 years could have taken place, I really don't know. It just seems mysterious. I must have been very young when I started. I don't know.
Well, you were.
I imagine I must have been.
You
it
were.
It just doesn't seem possible. And I have to say, I am enormously grateful, too, for this. I get such a big kick out of it still. And my gratitude to the music branch for not being just fed up with me by this time, you know.
Well, you know, this week it's KUSC at the Movies Week, and some of the other nominees have been on the show, and they all talked about you.
Oh, did they?
Oh, yeah, yeah. It's just the year that it was just all of those young guys,
yes,
you know,
yeah,
Hurwitz,
yeah.
And the, I had to stop two of them in the middle of the conversation and say, "Well, wait a minute, we're talking about your picture."
I see. Yes. Yeah. Oh, nice.
Well, obviously, I've been joined tonight by John Williams. We're going to be talking about the score that brought him his 52nd Oscar nomination, the score for Star Wars, The Rise of Skywalker. John, welcome back to KUSC.
Thank you very much, Jim. It's wonderful to be with you and have a little chat with you and tell you again that I'm one of your biggest fans, one of the great voices of radio, I think, is Jim Schwader, and long may you reign.
Well, thank you so much. Thank you. Hey, to ask you the obvious question, this is the 9th and last. Was there kind of a bittersweet sense of doing this, or?
Well, I have to tell you, Jim, I'm very happy to put a bow on it. You know,
okay.
9 of them is quite enough. And also, I think Star Wars is certainly very special in many ways that are difficult to describe, at least for me. And the genius of George Lucas to create the first film that we saw with all little creatures and the interesting writing, and it took us to places we'd never seen before, created something very, very special. My hope, I must say now, is that it is put to rest in some way, that it isn't exploited and developed in odd new directions, which perhaps this Disney studio will want to do. I don't know. I like Mr. Bob Iger very, very much, and he knows that. But I think of Star Wars as being something really unique, George Lucas's creation. And it can stop where it stops so beautifully with Rey simply saying, "Rey Skywalker." And it was, for me, a perfect finale. It completed it for me. I'll put it that way to you. Then someone said to me, "Well, Kathleen Kennedy has a new idea for a new one." I thought, "Oh, my God, no, well, 9's quite enough." What a ride it's been. It's an inexplicable phenomenon around the world that people know these films and know the music and know the creatures and the sort of mythology of it all.
Yeah, isn't it?
It is. There's nothing like it in the history of movie. What other composer has ever had the opportunity to write for a series of films for over 40 years and each time add a theme or two to what is now a glossary of themes, probably over 30 of them, I haven't counted them all. Just going along and writing that in initially an unexpected way, we didn't expect a second film or a third or a fourth. So I feel enormously grateful for having given what has been a unique opportunity, I'm sure, in film, at least. I don't know of a theatrical composer. I mean, they probably have been, but they would have many different subjects. Richard Rodgers' career was probably 40 years or longer, but this is a unique thing.
Yeah.
And I'm very pleased about it. I wouldn't say proud, because I will always sense that I might have done better with this one or that one here or there. But well, I recognize it as an opportunity given to very, very few, if ever, any other composer.
Yeah. Oh, no question. She told me that the actual process of making the film and doing the score was a little bit different this time.
It was, Jim. Working with J.J. Abrams, this is the second time I've worked with J.J., the first one being the seventh one. And J.J. is a man who makes a lot of changes and works. He's a wonderful director, but he will shoot scenes over and over again. And the process went along for about 6 or 7 months for me, where I would write a scene that he'd given me, and then I'd complete the scene, possibly even record it. And he would say, well, that scene is not in the film anymore. We've done something else, and this is to replace it, and so on. So I can tell you, Jim, this is, I think, a record. We recorded 226 minutes of music, which is over 3 hours of music. So in other words,
you've invested enough time to write 1.5 Wagner ring cycles.
That's right. But I never mind doing rewrites. I'm very happy about that because I can usually improve what I've done. But it's been a longer process in the case of J.J. and in both cases, The Force Awakens and this one, Rise of Skywalker. And I loved it. I loved J.J. It was always very friendly and very productive and very good working relationship with him and his group. And, of course, I could have happily done another 100 minutes of music. The orchestra, our studio orchestra, you've listened to some of it. The playing is absolutely superb. And the joys of these endless days of recording with them will stay with me. They play like one of the great symphony orchestras of the world.
Oh, they are.
Absolutely.
They are. And you told me that one of the things that you think is maybe the major reason that Steven Spielberg makes movies is so he can come to the recording sessions.
That is very true, Jerry. He can't get enough music. He's very different than most producers and directors because at the end of the sessions, he will come to me and say, where are they going? I said, well, Stephen, the session is over. We don't have any more. Well, can't you play another hour? Have you got anything else to play? And so he never wants it to end and sits there and almost like he's at a concert rather than looking at something that might fit a scene and might not fit a scene. A physical pleasure that he has from orchestral music, which is so special and so very real. He grew up in Philadelphia in part. His mother took him to concerts of the orchestra when Jacob Krasmalnik was the concertmaster, and when Krasmalnik showed up on one of our recording sessions, this was the most thrilling thing in his life.
Yes.
That his film now had the concertmaster from the Philadelphia Orchestra leading our orchestra. So he's been particularly wonderful for me because he can't get enough music in his films. If there isn't, should we have music here or not? The answer is always, let's have it.
Yes, yes. And when his mother saw Jacob Krasmalnik playing,
yes,
they
say, yes,
she realized he had arrived.
That's exactly right.
Just as when I got David Raxon to autograph his album, and I sent it to my mother, who worshipped Laura and all those other stuff. My mother finally came to the conclusion that maybe I'd sort of in a very minor way arrived.
Yeah, that's nice. That's very good. Well, that is Stephen's story with music, and it's clear that he loves it. He's working as we speak on remaking West Side Story, very exciting, with a new script by Tony Kushner. And our friend Gustavo Dudamel is conducting New York, the New York Philharmonic, which is very appropriate since it was Lenny's orchestra.
Sure.
Yeah.
There were a number of points in the score that I think he used the timpani differently than in any other Star Wars movie. And the guy playing the timp really knows what he's doing. Mm-hmm. And, of course, he's someone you know pretty well.
Yes, I do. He's my brother, Donald. He's a graduate of Curtis and studied in Philadelphia. And he's a wonderful player. And he had a few aggressive moments in this.
He sure did.
Which he loved. J.J. said to me, I love your brother, the timpanist. And I said, I'm not sure I love him all the time.
Well, Fritz Reiner used to say, never look encouragingly at a percussionist.
No, or a trumpeter.
Or a trumpeter.
Oh, yes.
Of course, your father was one of the great session men of his time.
He was. I was going to say Benny Herman, but your listeners will know Bernard Herman, who seemed to like my father's playing toward the end of his life, because he used to say, old man Williams is not afraid to hit the head and break it if he has to.
Yes.
Whereas some timpanists will say, well, there's a microphone a few inches away. You don't have to hit it that hard. Benny would say, never mind, take the microphone away and hit it, you know. So, yes, he had a long and wonderful career. He's remembered particularly by the Raymond Scott Quintet, which you must remember.
Absolutely.
For being one of the great precision novelty things that Scott created with his group. And, yes, so we've had wonderful players in that orchestra here, as you know. What great good fortune to have them.
Yeah, yeah. And of course, it began during the 1930s and 40s when all of these great European Jewish musicians had to flee Hitler's Europe. And they settled here because this was one of the towns where you could really make a decent living playing real music.
Yes. It's amazing now in retrospect. And as you know so well, we had Schoenberg and Stravinsky and Rachmaninoff and others living here in L.A., which is a little town then, a long way from Berlin or Vienna. But part of our great debt to the tragedy of the war that so many came here and taught us so much, I think you can say. I once asked recently Glenn Dichterow, who you will know, was the concertmaster of New York Philharmonic for so many years, Glenn, tell me about the old violinists that were here. Not so much Felix Slatkin, he was younger, but people like Harry Bluestone or Lou Reitemann at MGM, who sounded like Milstein when he played Previn's melodies and so on. And I asked Glenn, were they really great violinists? And he said, oh, yes, they were. They were fantastic players, even though playing only in the studio and only limited repertoire, although sometimes very demanding. And I think younger people have learned from them. And also, I think there are aspects, subtle aspects of the art that may have evaporated now. You know, music appears and presents its beauty and then evaporates very quickly. And we have to go on to the next. Recordings will help us to remember about the rubato style and the use of portamenti and such period devices really are not with us in the same way. Because I remember my experience in the Boston Pops Orchestra doing popular music, Gershwin, with any of it, Harold Arlen, Cole Porter, and so on, explaining to Tamara Smirnoff, our very Russian concert mistress, that the bowings would be different if you understand what the words are. This will take two strokes, or it should be two strokes under the bow here because of what the word is. And this is, I think, something, if you listen to the old films of the Hollywood musicals, that people like Lou Reitemann at MGM fully understood. And that is something that belongs to the period very specially. And it's a little bit esoteric, but it's an amazing difference if you take one of those pieces and play it now and shape the bowing to the lyric. At least it satisfied me more, I'll put it that way.
Yes. And your scores, this score especially, as I was listening to it, I mean, not only is it incredibly intricate and symphonically developed, as all the Star Wars scores are, but also there's a good deal of what the Viennese call schmutz and schmaltz in the bar lines, in the way that you tease the rhythms. Mm-hmm. It's so electrifying, you know, when it's done.
Well, it's Star Wars, of course, admits to these broadly romantic themes and identifying melodies and so on, which you wouldn't want to do in every film. It wouldn't suit certainly not every contemporary film, where you can have, as you call it, schmutz and schmerz or whatever that is. We can do it unembarrassingly somehow in Star Wars, and it seems to be all right, I hope. And it can't be done in every film, and taste being what it is. But I hope it works for this situation. It began that way. I have probably told you this story before about Luke and Leia in the first film. But I saw them as two young people doing their comedy scenes and doing their action scenes, all brilliantly, wonderfully well together. And I thought, they certainly will be lovers at the end of the film. You know, we didn't know at the time what they would be. So I wrote a love theme, Princess Leia, and this love theme that was meant to be for their union, to discover only a couple of years later that they were brother and sister, and I had it all wrong. So I had to write yet another theme for the next one. So this idea of having romantic themes seemed to spring right out of that first film. And the film held it somehow, And it's been part of how much fun we've been able to have melodically in an uninhibited way with these particular films.
Sure, sure. And of course, love themes for brothers and sisters, speaking of the Wagner Ring cycle, it worked pretty well for him.
That's right. So. Yeah, that's right.
Well, you're just returning, speaking of Schmutz and Schmaltz, from the town where they invented that, thanks to people like Fritz Kreisler. You're just returned from, I think, your debut with the Vienna Philharmonic.
Yes. I've never conducted on continental Europe soil ever, in London a lot over the years, but never in Europe. And I never really had planned to do it, Jim. You know, I'm not a traveling professional conductor. But I had an invitation a year or two ago from Vienna, and I thought, well, this is something I can't miss. There's no way you can say no to the Vienna Philharmonic, even though someone coming from Hollywood with my particular pedigree, whether that idea fits or not, I don't know. But I went and had, I must say, the most wonderful time in my musical life, I think. The orchestra was fabulous. I kept saying to people, I wish that you could see people who live in Vienna, see Vienna with my eyes, the eyes of someone who's seeing it in beautiful weather for the very first time, something that you see every day in your lives, but you don't really look at it. Can you imagine seeing that for the first? Absolutely. And the same thing with Musikverein, never having, I was in there 1,000 years ago as a tourist and didn't really see it. I think I told you when we met tonight, I went with my young bride at the time when we saw nothing but each other. We didn't see anything in Vienna. So it was a very musically gratifying experience. Anna Sophie came. Anna Sophie Mutter came and played some selections that we recently recorded together, which she does so brilliantly. And that added to the luster of the whole experience. And I can't wait to go back. I love it.
Well, if they have any sense, they'll invite you to do the New Year's Day concert.
Ah, I see. Well, it was absolutely wonderful. The orchestra is very young, and I know their reputation in the past has been one of a difficult orchestra, like they have been. But I know they couldn't have been friendlier. There was not even a speck of condescension of any kind about the music, about Hollywood, or any of it. And you remember our friend Andre Previn so well, who was instantly married, as your listeners will know, to Anna Sophie. Always felt that he and I would never live down the stigma of Hollywood and in the world of serious music. And of course, we like to think that there isn't a world of serious music. I mean, there's the academic and the intellectual aspects of it and so on, and the popular element. But you have to think that no one owns music. It belongs to all of us, all of it. And you may have your tastes and your predilections and your cultural roots and so on. So I think the world is changing. It's liberalizing. Music is everywhere.
Yeah. And actually, I think one of the best things, speaking of Vienna, said on the subject, something Esa-Pekka Salonen said when they recorded that music, the LA Philharmonic recorded mm-hmm. that album of music by the aforementioned Bernard Herrmann. Mm-hmm. And Esa-Pekka said, well, it's as natural for this orchestra to play this music
yes.
as it is for the Vienna Philharmonic to play Strauss waltzes.
That's right. That's right. He was right. And so my experience was absolutely thrilling in every way. I would love to go back and revisit them.
Yeah. I'm sure it's mutual. In fact, I know for a fact it is.
I hope so.
You said something very interesting about the Wren theme, this theme associated with the new Darth Vader.
Yes, the Wren's theme, which is the manifestation of complete evil that we've had in the last three films for Wren. And this one, of course, he's been transformed back into Ben, a benign son and now hero. And it was actually J.J.'s idea. Is there any way to transform his evil melody into something that's recognizable as Wren's theme that would be positive and present him as a hero? And it really worked very well, Jim. I changed the melody very little, some harmonic and a little modality shift. Probably people will not notice it's the same tune, treated very differently when he becomes a benign figure. And that's something I've never done in my life in a film, and I enjoyed the fact that it worked so well, that the melody, I didn't have to be turned upside down, it just had to be altered very slightly, mostly harmonically and modally, to make him a hero. That was, I must say, a lot of fun, and it felt like it worked so well, and probably something that people don't notice in the theater. We don't expect them to, and it's fine if they don't. But if they feel the change emotionally and in their reaction to,
you know, you'd be surprised.
People,
you'd be surprised.
Would I?
Oh, oh yeah, because, you know, even kids. And it's something our mutual friend Randy Newman likes to say. He says, you know, well, America, we may be 25th in mathematics around the world. Yeah. We're not 25th in terms of movie comprehension.
I see.
And the way you feel things,
yes,
in a
yes,
score,
yes,
that you might not be physically aware of it and say, oh, yeah, there. But you know something's happening.
Yes.
And it happens to even very young viewers.
Yes.
It's amazing.
Well, that's nice. That makes me very happy. But I enjoyed that shift a great deal. And I'm grateful to JJ. I probably would have written a new theme. A new positive heroic theme for him. He said, no, if you just have, you know, have him transformed into something positive and benign, it would be good and fun.
Yeah. Oh, exactly. Exactly. Well, looking back, it's been a heck of a ride, as
yes.
we alluded to earlier. I mean, it's very hard to think of another composer of any sort for the opera, for the concert hall, who's had this much concentrated work on a single idea
mm-hmm.
that's been able to do it so richly and so with such incredible imagination and subtlety, too. I think this is one of the most subtle of the Star Wars scores.
Ah, oh, I see. Well, as I said earlier, Jim, I feel very fortunate can one be to have an opportunity like this given unexpectedly. It just sort of emerged from film to film, and it was possible to add work, add pieces and themes and bits of material to one single idea. Wonderful. Now that it's been completed, at least in my mind, I look at it as being something almost impossible. You couldn't set out to do it. You could never set out to be nominated 52 times. I mean, that's crazy. No one can be that old to begin with. So I'm a lucky man, and I enjoy it. My love for music has never been greater. I've never been more excited about writing and conducting and doing all the things I can do with what time I have to do it, how precious it all is. I'm a grateful man.
Yeah. Well, that sort of makes it unanimous, John, speaking for all the people who love this music.
Thank you.
And I am willing to bet just about anything this won't be the last nomination because, you know, Walt is still out there just waiting to be knocked off.
Okay, well, I'll keep at it, Jim. We can do that.
John, always a great pleasure.
Thank you so much, Jim. I'm a great fan of yours. Long may you reign with what beautiful work you're doing. I love it. I love it.
Thank you so much.